Hello and welcome to the call. I'd like to give you a little information about how the call will work this evening, and then we'll get started. If I would appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the 6 button on your phone so we can mute all background noises. So if everybody wants to do that now, that would be great. Okay, and if someone enters the call late, as people usually do, and we hear any background noises, we'll just have to announce that again. Okay, at the end of this teleseminar, I will take a few questions, and at that time, I'll just ask those of you who have muted yourself to push the 6 button again so we can hear you. I'll repeat that again at the end. The format is simply that I will interview Lynn, and then we'll open the lines for questions and answers with about 15 minutes left. Okay, for those of you who don't know me, I am Dotsie Bregel, and I'm the founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found at nabbw.com, and Boomer Women Speak, BoomerWomenSpeak.com. And they both kind of share the number one spots on major search engines for baby boomer women. I'm passionate about educating and empowering my generation of women. Our sites are proudly sponsored by Dolans.com, so if you're interested in excellent financial information that will encourage you to live a more financially responsible midlife, we recommend that you visit Dolans.com. And we're also sponsored by Elations, which is a daily drink supplement that offers relief from joint aches and pains. It's an alternative to taking the big pills, and you can find them at Elations.com. And we'd like to mention them because their sponsorships really help us continue to do the type of educational opportunities that we're doing this evening. Since launching Boomer Women Speak over 5 years ago, I've been connecting, encouraging, and supporting Boomer women on a daily basis. I feel like I have my finger on the pulse of this spirited generation, and I dedicate a great portion of my time to creating opportunities that inspire women to explore their passions and live their lives to the fullest. I have become the go-to person for journalists who are interested in learning more about Boomer women. So my prayer is to embrace all women and provide them with the means to soar. And I think you'll agree that this topic this evening is something that will certainly be beneficial to many of us on the call, and actually many who are not on the call. And we encourage you that if you enjoy and can really take something away from this teleseminar this evening, that you would offer the information to friends that may be in need of hearing it. We will have this teleseminar posted at BoomerWomenSpeak.com and NABBW.com for free, and I believe Lynn is also going to post it on her site. Okay,
yes, I will.
Good. If you were not a member of the NABBW, the fee to join for the month of April, and this offer is almost up, is only $50. It's typically $75, but I'm celebrating the big 5-0 birthday bash and decided to offer membership for $50. So if you're interested, you can email me at dots@nabbw.com, or you can go to nabbw.com and just pay right through the link that's in the important announcements section at the top of the homepage. Okay, this call is one of our free and open to the public educational teleseminars, and we're just really happy to do it because we really take pride in helping women at every stage of life and in every aspect of midlife. Okay, this evening we're interviewing Lynn Tolson. Hello, Lynn.
Hello, Dotsie.
And when we begin talking, if you could speak up just a little bit so we can get a really clear voice for the recording, it helps.
Okay,
Lynn is the author of Beyond the Tears, A True Survivor Story. This is her memoir about suicide attempts in the aftermath of sexual abuse. She is the founder of the Project for Tears, telling everyone about rape and suicide. Using her personal experience and professional knowledge, Ms. Tolson presents on these topics. She offers a message of hope and healing, as well as an understanding of silent issues that cause individual suffering and plague our society. We mentioned earlier, maybe before you were on the call, that her website is beyondthetears.com. So if you're in front of a computer and you want to pull that site up, you can do that. You can also look at boomerwomenspeak.com or nabbw.com while you're on the call. And we also would suggest that you might have a piece of pen and paper just in case anything she says you want to, you know, really strikes a chord and you want to jot that down. Okay, if you entered the call late and you have not pressed the 6 button to mute all background noises, I would appreciate it if you would do that. I hear a little fuzzy something in the background, so I'm not sure which phone that's coming from. But if you haven't pushed 6 and you could do so, that would be great. Okay, Lynn, how are you this evening?
Hi, Dotsie. I'm fine, thank you. And I really appreciate this teleseminar so that we can bring awareness to a topic that affects a lot of women.
Absolutely. We're happy to do so. So before we get started with some of the questions that people know you're going to be answering this evening, I just wanted to ask if you'd be kind enough to tell us a little bit about your story and why you wrote the book. And I know some people on the call have read it and some have not. So if you want to tell us a little bit about your story and then why you wrote the book, that would be great.
Okay. Well, I did not intend to write a book about sexual assault. I started to write a book about overcoming drugs and alcohol and about overcoming the acting out that I did as a teenager. So I started writing this book in my 40s, and I discovered as I was writing that there was a common theme, and that was about addiction and suicide. So I went back into therapy in my 40s to find out why I was so suicidal and discovered that in the course of therapy that indeed I had been sexually assaulted, molested, and that includes incest, as a child. And as my story evolved into a memoir, I made the correlation between the sexual assault and my suicide attempts. I wrote the book because I had discovered that these are social problems that carry stigmas and that there seems to be, or there is, a code of silence. And I learned that when we're not speaking about the crime of sexual assault, it becomes more of a silent epidemic. And nothing really gets solved in silence, so that sexual assault, incest, rape perpetuates for generations. I wrote the book because I realized that by bringing my dark secrets to light, I could help others who had similar events, and they could learn that they were not alone. And my hope is that readers, whether or not they have experienced any kind of sexual assault themselves, that they can explore their own emotions to open up lines of communication, and with that, eliminate shame and even experience healing. And as my book evolves towards the end of my story, the readers will see that there is hope and healing from the issues that cause individual suffering and indeed plague our whole society.
Okay.
I think I answered 2 questions.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Okay, and actually, you know, I have to say that this is one thing that is really good about the Internet, and that is the anonymity that goes with it. We have a forum community at boomerwomenspeak.com, and women are welcome to go in there and post about this topic, because Lynn is also in that forum community. The other thing that's really good about the Internet and these types of teleseminars is that people can call in and no one has to know. You can also email Lynn, and she can correspond with you too. So if there's someone that is suffering in silence that's on the line, please know that you know there is help, and it can be done with some anonymity also. Okay.
Right.
All right. Let's start by asking you, what are the myths about rape?
Okay. Rape myths and rape facts. We are living in a victim-blaming society, and that is one of the myths, that the victim is to blame in some way for the assault. I'm going to be using the feminine pronoun because women are more likely to experience assault than men, but I do want to make it clear that there are plenty of men in our society who have been sexually assaulted as well and remain in this silence. So the first myth is that victims are to blame in some way for the assault. Or another myth is that rape is an expression of sexual desire. People think rape won't happen to me. People say that men can't stop themselves when they are sexually aroused. Hmm. Another myth is that rape is usually committed by strangers. Another is that it's no big deal if a woman is forced to have sex with someone she knows, for example, a friend or while on a date or with a boyfriend or with a spouse. And the myth is that it isn't really rape, that men are never victims of sexual assault. That is a myth, as I mentioned earlier. That sexual violence does not occur between lesbians or between gay men. And the ninth rape myth that I've written is that if the victim was drunk or drugged, he or she was asking for it. So those are nine rape myths that I've come across.
Wow, they're all pretty powerful.
Yes.
Huh. Okay, well, what about the facts about rape? Can you share the facts with us?
Yes, the victim is not to blame. The rapist is always responsible for having committed the rape, regardless of the victim's appearance, her behavior, her judgment, or previous actions. The victim is not responsible for the rape. Rapists are responsible for the rape.
Okay, and that's a good point, because I'm sure a lot of people in reflection may think, oh, I shouldn't have worn that, I shouldn't have danced like that, I shouldn't have done this, and maybe it's my fault. But
right.
What you're saying is, no, that's not the case. You were still raped.
That's right. That's not the case. And also, it's not just the internal. It has to do with the victim-blaming society who says, oh, she shouldn't have worn that short skirt. Or it's her fault for drinking all that beer. Or did you see how drunk she was? So both the person saying, you know, I shouldn't have done that, and then the rest of society saying she or he should not have behaved in that way. Another rape fact is mm-hmm. that it is actually an expression of power and control. It is a hostile act,
mm-hmm.
and it uses sex as a vehicle of aggression. It's really not about sex. It's about hostility and aggression.
Wow.
Rape is a violent abuse of power in which one person acts without regard for the pain and trauma inflicted on another.
Okay. Okay. Any
Shall
other
I go
facts?
On?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yes. I have six more.
Good.
Okay. One study found that 1 in 4 college women have been victims of rape or sexual assault.
Wow.
And about 10% of sexual assault victims are men.
Okay.
Okay. Men are capable of and responsible for controlling both their minds and bodies, just as women are, and that sexual assault is a choice. So that pertains to the myth that men are not in control of their bodies, when in fact we all are.
Right.
Okay, another fact is that college women are in far greater danger of being raped by a friend or a fellow student than by a stranger. Almost 90% of college women who were raped knew their assailants. Another fact is that sexual intercourse forced by an acquaintance is rape. In some ways, it is more traumatic than stranger rape because the victim's trust in others and in her own judgment can be seriously damaged.
Sure.
Another fact is that both men and women may be perpetrators or victims of sexual assault. Unfortunately, male victims rarely seek help due to embarrassment and the fear that they will not be taken seriously.
Okay, but I think that's probably true of some women, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it has perpetuated. Fear of retaliation is a huge part of why we don't tell.
Right.
Or that when women do tell, they are not believed or in some way, like I said earlier, are blamed for it. I have two more facts.
Okay.
Sexual violence does occur in same-sex relationships.
Okay.
And the last fact that I've written down is that the inability to give consent is not asking for it. In other words, if someone has had too much to drink and it does not have the whereabouts to say no, that doesn't mean she or he was asking for it.
And it doesn't mean that they weren't raped.
That's right.
Right. Okay, right. Well, those are some empowering facts, I think. And I think that they, you know, will really help people who have been in this situation feel better about speaking out. And that's the reason we're doing the call. If anybody entered the call late and hasn't pushed the 6 button, I hear some static. And I don't know if that's coming from Lynn's or my phone, but... Okay, I think that's a little better. Okay, all right, let's move on then to the question about power and control. What do power and control have to do with sex abuse?
Well, as I said earlier, rape is not so much, sex is used as a vehicle in any sexual assault, but it is more about power and control. And I am going to be using a form that was developed by the Domestic Abuse Intervention Project. It's called the Power and Control Wheel, and there are several categories that pertain to power and control. When someone uses intimidation to manipulate another, that person is trying to have power and control over the other.
Mm-hmm.
That intimidation can be in the form of displaying weapons or destroying her property. Using intimidation also means making her or him afraid by using looks or actions or gestures.
Mm-hmm.
And intimidation can also take the form of abusing pets. I do tell a story in my book where a pet was used as a matter of using intimidation and thereby exhibiting power and control over a situation. Another category is using emotional abuse. Power and control takes the form of humiliation. When one person is putting another person down or calling the other person name or playing mind games, that is a part of power and control. And when someone can use emotional abuse towards another, that person can also escalate to other forms of abuse, including sexual assault.
Okay, and Lynn, you know, I wanted to tell you, as we're going through some of these, if you have some examples from your book, personal examples that you'd like to share, I think it would be helpful to kind of drive the point home.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so go ahead.
Okay. Isolation is another form of power and control. Isolation means, again, I'm using the pronoun she. He is controlling what she does, what she reads, where she goes, who she sees and talks to. But as I said earlier, that can apply to men as well. I tell in my story how isolation was used in my case when I was a victim of domestic violence, and I literally lived on 2.5 acres of desert and had no car during the day. And that was a way by which the man I was married to could control me, to keep me home all day. And therefore, I could not tell what was going on with me. And also, I was so isolated that I didn't even realize that the verbal abuse or the emotional abuse that I was enduring at the time was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of power and control is when the perpetrator minimizes, denies, or blames the victim. Generally, they'll make light of the abuse. In the case of domestic violence, for instance, where he hits her and she gets a bruise, he'll say, "Oh, you bruised too easy. Oh, you're just too sensitive. Oh, you must be sick. Maybe you have anemia. You ought to get that checked. But then if she does go to get it checked, he won't allow it to happen because maybe the truth would be told. Minimizing includes saying that she caused the upset, that she provoked the incident. He'll use jealousy to justify his actions, like if he grabs her arm too hard at a party, if she's talking to somebody he doesn't want her to, that she thinks that because he's acting that way, oh, he loves me, and that's why he's tugging at me to stop talking to this other person.
And it sounds like they're always pointing the finger, which is something else I think that is probably very true of this. Is that right?
Yes, that's definitely the case. The case where the perpetrator is in some ways not emotionally capable of taking responsibility,
mm-hmm.
although the responsibility always belongs to the perpetrator.
Right, and just the fear, I think, of reporting and that type of thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Children are often used in the case of power and control. Children are often used as pawns. Some cases would be where, the father has visitation rights and he uses those visitation rights to inquire about the mother or to bash the mother. It can be vice versa, where the mother bashes the father. Or using the children to relay messages. Go tell your mother that I'm not going to see you next week because she hasn't done such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Or that he threatens to take the children away, calling her an unfit mother. Another example is of power and control is using male privilege, and that is when someone acts as if they're the master of the domain and treats her like a servant. And again, this can apply to all relationships, not necessarily heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
Or using male privilege, using the one to define men's and women's roles. I do this. I go out and earn the money, so you need to stay home and make the dinner, which was my personal example in the story that I tell about domestic violence. Economic abuse is a part of power and control where perhaps he is the breadwinner and he gives her a certain allowance and tells her what she can and can't spend the money on, preventing her from getting or keeping a job. I remember a line that the man I was married to gave to me. He had met me when I was a waitress in a restaurant. Then I did indeed marry him. I was too intimidated not to, and I wanted to go back to work and earn my own money, and he said to me, no wife of mine is going to go slinging hash in some dive restaurant.
Mm.
So I was prohibited from getting a job, until, of course, I got the wherewithal to leave.
Right. But it takes a lot of guts.
it took a lot, yes. And then a really important part of this power and control is using coercion and threats. I mentioned the marriage I was in, and I married this man because he stood there and said, if you don't marry me, I will kill myself.
Mm.
I was 19 years old at the time, and my father had committed suicide the year before.
Mm.
So suicide was on my mind, and I believed this man, and I didn't want to feel responsible for his suicide.
Right.
Now, the reason these categories of power and control come into play with sexual assault is because, as I said earlier, sexual assault is about power and control. It's not about sex. Sex is the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is that everything for power and control?
Yes.
Okay, good. Why don't we move on to the signs? Like, what signs do the sexually abused typically exhibit?
Okay, and this can carry through to any age group. Behavior changes would include excessive crying or extreme mood swings,
mm-hmm.
fearfulness, or bravado, withdrawal or rebellion, a fear of certain places, people, or activities. And this can apply to many different meanings. You know, anything could create these behavior changes, but these are some of the signs. They are not all-inclusive, and they don't explain everything. Now, in my case, in terms of being sexually abused as a child, I had my last straw when I was 12 years old. By the time I was 13, I was either up and off the wall or I was down and in the dumps. Mm-hmm. So that would be a case of extreme mood swings. I would be either very withdrawn and stay in my room for days, being fearful of even going to school, or I would go to school and maybe smoke pot. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of withdrawal and rebellion.
Okay, and now can you talk a little bit about how women are sexually abused as children and how it affects their future relationships? And maybe share a little bit about your abuse as a child, which is in your book, and then how you kind of fell into this relationship when you were 19.
Well, I would have denied it at the time, but I was told that the man I was married to was a father figure to me. He was 18 years older than me. Mm-hmm. The way he treated me was exactly the way my father had treated me. Mm-hmm. My father was a verbally abusive man. He was
Edward Blackwell.
Violent.
Okay, Edward, if you'd be kind enough to push the 6 button so we can block out any of the background noise, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So I'll go on. What I'm saying is that I married a man when I was 19 who treated me exactly the way my father had treated me, because that's all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And the similarities in retrospect are uncanny, including the man that I was married to would wave around a gun and threaten to kill himself the same way my father had, but I knew no different.
Right.
And so... As a woman who was barely 20, I married a man who was exactly like my father. So it was a pattern of familiarity that I had not yet had the wherewithal to break.
Mm-hmm. Or were even that aware of at that age?
No, I even denied it. When someone would say, you know, he's like a father figure to you, I would say, oh, no, he's not. He loves me.
Right.
Because my father would say that he loved me and at the same time do something to hurt me, and so I thought that's what love was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know oftentimes depression is quite a big piece of this. Do you want to tell us what the symptoms of depression are?
Yeah, the symptoms of depression, people may be familiar with feeling blue, but if someone is feeling blue for a very long period of time and then cannot be treated for that depression and cannot really engage in their hobbies or anything that interested them before, chances are they would need treatment for depression. Not all depressed people move to suicidal thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But suicidal thinking can be a part of depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason that I talk about suicide is that victims of sexual assault, and when I say sexual assault, I also include incest, victims of sexual assault are more likely to attempt suicide than those who have not been victimized. And the percentage is like 19%. So I'm saying that those who have been victimized are 19% more likely to attempt suicide than a group that has not been victimized.
Wow.
So that's what TEARS is about. That is what I talk about, telling everyone about rape and suicide, is because there is a correlation. I did not even know that that was the correlation until I was 43. And ready to face my childhood.
Now, this is an interesting piece of the depression, and I'm just going to ask a question. I'm not sure what the answer is, but there are people who bury this whole incestual thing, and they become depressed. And is it often during that depression and the time that they get help for that depression that they discover that they have been raped by, you know, a family member or something?
Well, I've never really studied exactly what you're asking, but I can talk about my personal experience.
Okay.
When I wanted to leave that man that I was married to, I was about 24 years old, and I literally ran for my life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I ended up with a counselor named Karen, and her goal at that time was literally to teach me how to live without suicidal thinking and without harming myself.
Mm-hmm.
However, in my 20s, I did not reveal to her that I had been a victim of child sexual abuse, including incest.
Okay, and you knew that, but you did not. I mean, you were totally aware of that. Now, but you just chose not to present it at the time.
Yes,
okay.
Because it was ingrained in me. I was nearly hypnotized not to tell.
Right.
The phrase that was used by my father was, "You will remember nothing."
Mm-hmm.
I was also victimized by my brother, and he used the same phrase. So I trained myself. As a teenager, that was my homework, to train myself not to remember.
Right, right. Wow. It's amazing what the mind can do.
It is amazing.
Gosh.
To protect itself.
Right, right. Okay, why don't we talk a little bit about the risk factors for suicide?
Okay. What in the case of suicide risk factors, I talk about this if somebody feels this way or if somebody sees these factors in somebody else or these behaviors. It does include depression, and I said earlier that depression may increase the potential for suicidal thinking. Another high predictor of suicide attempts is if that person has had a previous attempt. And a previous attempt can be really masked. When I was about 12 years old, I took a bottle of Excedrin. And I wasn't really thinking, if I take this bottle of Excedrin, I'm going to die. I was thinking, maybe this bottle of Excedrin will save me somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But in retrospect and in counseling, it was a masked way of attempting to ease the pain, and it could have killed me. So a previous attempt is a high predictor of a subsequent attempt. A suicide risk factor if somebody is abusing drugs and or alcohol, which can be depressants. They might be more likely to be depressed and attempt suicide while in that state.
Mm.
The person has lost rational thinking. They're unrealistic, and they feel very isolated from others. So a person without social support is more likely to attempt suicide if all these other conditions pertain.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody who's isolated is going to attempt suicide. So I hope that the listeners are understanding the train of thought.
Right.
This is just one portion of suicide risk factors.
And do people who have been abused often cut themselves off from society because of the shame?
Well, again, that isn't something that I studied that I would know exactly,
mm-hmm.
you know, statistics on, but that is most likely. I know I became very isolated. The shame was placed on me, and I want to make it clear that the shame does not belong to the victim.
Right.
The shame belongs to the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
But when that happens, the victim often takes on the shame. And yes, they feel so shamed and so humiliated and so embarrassed and so betrayed that they become isolated. And in that isolation, depression can be fostered and suicidal thinking can be nurtured.
Wow.
Nurture is not the right word. Escalated.
Escalated, right,
mm-hmm.
right. Well, can you tell us Why are these silent social problems? I mean, especially because, and maybe talk a little bit about the boomers and how surprising it really is that more boomers haven't shared their stories, because I think we have talked before about the difference between the kids now, the younger generation. More people are speaking out, I think, because of some of the pioneers from our generation, but there weren't a great many of women from our generation that did speak out. So if
nobody spoke about it. It took me 37 years to find out that a family member of mine had been sexually assaulted by other family members. We're talking within my own family. I found out that other family members had experienced incest.
Okay, and was that after you wrote your book?
Yeah, it was after I wrote my book, but
okay.
Before they knew about the book.
Oh, but before they knew about the book. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like the book was the catalyst.
Okay.
That is how shrouded in silence it is. But I have seen, maybe because of the availability of the Internet, it seems to me that there are more 20-somethings who are saying, I was a victim of incest, I was sexually assaulted, and now I am a cutter, I cut myself, and I want help. It seems like there are more younger people speaking out and asking for help than in our generation,
mm-hmm.
one generation before.
Right, right.
And I think it's because there are there's a greater availability of talk on the Internet, like
mm-hmm.
I said,
mm-hmm.
and we have the talk shows
mm-hmm.
that often bring up the subject.
That's so true. But, you know, the thing with the Internet is these kids, if they're aware enough of their issue, they can go online and Google anything, and information is literally at their fingertips, which is wonderful. And I think the fact that they can find so much on the Internet makes them realize that they're not alone. Whereas before the Internet, there weren't many books about this. Unless you went through a phone book and happened to find the one number to call that was in all of the phone book, the help really wasn't there for you.
Well, how about this? When I was 10, I looked in the dictionary to see what the word incest meant.
Mm.
And that was my reference. I probably had heard the word incest, and I probably had some kind of connection,
mm-hmm.
but that was my source, was
right.
the dictionary.
That's it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And if you were to go to Google today and do search incest, you could find help. And I think that that's one of the things that's really good about the Internet for this younger generation, as long as they aren't only sharing this information online. You know, it's really helpful for the people who are offering help online to encourage the kids to speak to someone, too. But I'm sure there are kids who are using just the Internet because they don't want to go to a person. But at least there's some help.
Right. And the shame factor is a big part of it. And also that sexual assault and its ramifications, such as addiction and or suicide attempts or alcoholism or cutting, those are unsolved social problems, and they carry stigmas. And then there's also the silence. The perpetrator will tell the child, if you tell, your mother will die.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, your father will die. If you tell, you'll be taken away from your parents. Now, what if it's the parents who are committing the sexual assault?
Right.
You know, if the child tells, then they're in a huge conundrum, because if the child tells, then they're telling on the very person that they rely on for safety and security, theoretically.
Right, right. It's so sad. It's just pathetic. I want to get through two more questions before we open the lines up for Q&As. If someone were to come to me, let's say, and kind of share their secret. How can I support them?
Well, that's a good question. The first thing is to believe. Whether a child or an adult, when somebody tells you that, they're telling the truth. It's very, very unlikely that someone would make that up.
Right.
So, yeah, the first thing would be to believe. Another thing to do would to help that person find safety. What if they're still in that situation?
Right.
Where they're being harmed in some way. You would want to support and to find help them find safety.
Okay. And what does that safety look like? Just getting them out of the home and in someone else's, or into a shelter, or back with their parents?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because it depends on what your community has to offer.
Okay. But you'd also have to convince them that whatever, you know, this perpetrator has said to them isn't going to happen. And can you be certain of that? You know, like if they're telling them, if you leave me, I'm going to kill whoever, or, you know, kill you or the child or whatever. How can we assure them that that's not true?
And you can't.
Right.
It could be true.
Yeah, I know. That's the kind of freaky part. You know, if you're the person trying to help, I think that you probably have to get help in helping them.
Yes, and it's very complex, and most communities have some type of help available. And when I mean help, there are crisis centers, there are shelters, there's counseling available. You as a friend can't do it alone.
Right, right. Well, then let's talk. The last question then is really what resources are available, and this is where I would refer people to your site, because you can tell us all the names of the books and all the other websites or associations or whatever, but you really have you have a very impressive website with so much information for someone who is looking for this type of information. Lots of great articles and resources. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the resources?
Okay, well, like you said, the resources right now are very numerous, and I have a list of books on my site, and it's not like reading is going to solve a problem, but there is a term called bibliotherapy, and that's a form of self-help where somebody can read and learn that they're not alone. The first book that helped me, and I was in my 40s, was The Courage to Heal. And it was very strange, because those phrases kept coming to me. I was 43 years old, and I kept hearing the phrase, the courage to heal, the courage to heal. And I really didn't know what that meant. And I hadn't yet fully faced. I'm going to answer your question in a minute.
Okay, that's
right. I hadn't
yet
fully faced what I had to face, which was the truth that was within me, was that I had been a victim of incest and other child abuse. So the courage to heal kept coming to me, and at the time I didn't, you know, Google was not a big deal. I wouldn't have thought to Google
right.
The courage to heal. My way of protecting myself when I wanted to withdraw in a safe manner, which compared to a destructive manner, a safe manner for me would go to a library. So I went to the library, and at the time there were still those catalog cards, and this was just like 10 years ago. Instead of using a computer, I found the book, The Courage to Heal, and the subtitle is Help for Survivors of Incest. And I thought, that's not me. The courage to heal must mean something else. And so it took me almost 2 years to pick up that book and call a counselor and ask for help and say, I think this is me.
Wow. But yeah. I'm so glad you're sharing that, because there might be other people on the call who have waited longer, or maybe who have only waited, you know, a month or two, but it's time to pick up something and begin to heal. So go ahead and answer the question about resources.
Okay, well, back to bibliotherapy, there are a lot of books on my site that I mentioned that I found personally helpful and not too triggering. In other words, somebody might triggering means that somebody might be reading a paragraph and it puts them back in the position as if they're experiencing the abuse again. So most of the books that are listed on my site, I did not feel were too triggering, okay, or triggering in any way.
That's wonderful. Right.
Yeah. So I would encourage anybody listening to go to the site and to look for some of the books. I've also listed resources, and the first resource I would go to would be RAINN, R-A-I-N-N, and that stands for Rape and Incest National Network. And that is an organization that connects people with community. So we talked about earlier, if you knew of somebody or if you yourself revealed or knew that you needed some kind of help or that person needed help, RAINN is the go-to organization that connects people to what is available in their community.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, you know what? I'm on your resource page, and I don't see that. Am I missing it? Under organizations, you have Girls From Within, a web radio interview, and Divine Seeds of Hope. And then you have recommended viewing. And then
the blog page. I see what you're saying. Yeah. You're at resources.
I am.
And I would encourage listeners to then go to my blog page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the website is static. I don't change that very often.
Okay.
But I do change the blog frequently. I recently listed a very important documentary on my blog.
Oh, good.
I came across this documentary called Incest, A Family Tragedy. And it is a documentary that is trying to delve into the causes of incest in regards to why is it still a silent subject, and what can we do about it, and how can we protect children.
Oh, very good. So prevention, too.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, this is a society that is, I just want to say, is that it's after the fact, you know, when something has already occurred. But the focus of this particular documentary that I'm mentioning is to stimulate thought as to how can we prevent, especially child sexual abuse.
Okay. Very good. Now, in case someone does not have the internet, you would recommend RAINN, and perhaps they could go to the library and use the internet at the library to look them up. And that's RAINN.com?
Org.
.org.
.org.
Okay, .org. Thank you. And then the first book that you would recommend would be The Courage to Heal, A Guide for Women. So
yes.
If you're not in front of the site, you might want to jot those two things down. Okay, Lynn, anything else before we open the line for questions?
I don't think so.
You don't think so. Okay, if you're on the call and you have a question, please push the 6 button so we can hear you. So you have to push the 6 button first, and then we would be able to hear if you have a question. And I know sometimes it takes people a couple seconds to get up the nerve to ask a question, so that's fine. We'll wait a couple seconds. But if
hello, can you hear me?
We sure can.
Yes.
Go ahead.
This is Karen. I spoke a little bit earlier that I read the book. But one thing, when Lynn was talking, she said it was a memoir. And then you talked about this came out to you in therapy. Were there any other resources? Like, did you journal as a child, or was there any way you could go back to what it was that you experienced and then feel the emotion after going to therapy?
Yes, I did.
Do I make sense?
Yes. I did journal as a child, only we didn't call it a journal. We called it a diary.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that little lock and key thing.
Yeah. And so I did have some diaries. And when I read them in retrospect, I was shocked at what I was reading. And, yeah, all the emotions came back to me, and I was triggered, and I had flashbacks, and I had to go to therapy again in my 40s. But this therapy was different. In my 20s, it was, you know, how do I live without suicidal thinking? In my 40s, it was, how do I live with the truth that I've just uncovered?
Oh, that's fabulous.
So, I recommend journaling as a way to get in touch with yourself.
You're right, baby boomers. We thought about them as they were diaries. That's so true. That is so true.
Yes.
Can I ask you another question?
Yes. Sure. Go ahead. One more.
When did you first have those thoughts of suicide? I've listened to you where you were isolated or you went to school and you were a rebel. But how old were you when you first tried or gave in to that?
The Excedrin, I was 10. I was 10.
You were 10.
Yeah.
Well, your book says right in the beginning, if anybody has not read that, it actually describes your suicide.
The suicide attempt when I was 25.
Oh, that was when you were 25.
Yeah, 24 or 25. It was way more than Excedrin.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And how old were you when you wrote this book?
When I started to write the book, I was 44 and 45, and I used my journals. I also did something that was, when I think about it, was very brave. My mother had sent me my childhood photo album, and I did not open it for years. But in my 40s, I opened up my photo journal and saw myself as a child, and that's when the floodgates opened, and that's when I started writing and writing and writing.
See, that's the whole thing that I'm thinking here. For all of us, there's got to be a trigger mechanism that opens it up again. I mean, I've lived in silence for years, you know, for years. And now I find myself telling everybody about your book, A Lady on a Plane, who I sent her. I contacted through beyondthetears.com and told her where to get a book. I'm like talking about it all the time, but each time I talk about it, comes up.
Each time you talk about it, I'm sorry, what was that?
More comes up. More memories come up.
Oh, for you, more of your own memories.
So I feel like I'm healing every day.
Good, so it's good to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Yes, very good.
I encourage people to talk about it.
Yes, because as Lynn says, nothing gets solved in silence. And
that's true.
That is really one of the most important messages this evening.
Well, I'm not going to hold up this whole conversation.
Okay.
I just want to thank you, Lynn, for writing the book.
Thank you for
coming out and telling your story, which was, in essence, my story. It's everybody's story who's gone through domestic violence or incest or child molestation in any way.
Yeah.
And thank you for allowing me to open up.
Oh,
thank
that's
you.
Great. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Okay,
you're quite welcome.
Anyone else want to push? Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Okay, I didn't know you were here.
I'm here.
This is Lisa Marino Dickinson. I'm actually with Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse.
Oh, wow.
As the outreach manager. So listening to you was great, and I appreciate everything that you said. And I know the book, The Courage to Heal, as well. And not knowing who's on the phone, there is a book called Invisible Girls for teenage girls and young women, if anybody wants to look at that.
Ooh, okay. It's called Invisible Girls.
Invisible Girls.
And
I wrote a review of that book. It's on my blog. So
do you have it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
And is that for young girls to read?
It is teen girls, young girls, basically targeted towards women. And the younger generation.
So is it a book of prevention?
It's just an entailed book about dealing with child sexual abuse.
Okay.
And it just, the way that it's written is more targeted for the younger generation.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
That's great. All right.
Thank you.
So, and yes, I've dealing with survivors, and as being a survivor myself, I think that having people write is very therapeutic and healing. And when you talked about being able to deal with it, I guess one of the questions, two of the questions that that were drawn to me to speak about was what when your mind is able to handle it is when, and I'm sure you agree, is when you sort of remember even more, because your body does protect you. Your mind does protect you. And I have found talking to children, talking to adults, that the more that they are able to deal with it, the more they're remembering, which makes perfect sense. Now, yeah, you are absolutely right. It depends on the community. If somebody comes to you and asks you a question, there is times when I spoke to a school and not being a counselor myself, but being a survivor and have, you know, such experience with children. I was a counselor at a jail, and I ran a daycare of 125 kids. So the subject matter and Child Protective Services has, I have known since age of 16 with helping. And you do, you go to the authorities, and you do believe first. And you go to the authorities, you go to their school counselor, you go to anybody that's going to listen. I never went to the parent first because of how it could be handled within the home. I'm sure you know of the mother could protect the father.
Right.
The question or not if, you know, there are threats. So, but you are right. It depends on what community you're in, but you generally go to the authorities or to the counselors or Child Protective Services. I wanted to know, I have not read your book, and I apologize for that, but I will.
Good.
Okay, I will, I promise. I wanted your email. When I got online, I must have missed it, or my little three-year-old was running around, so I was trying to hear, and I don't know where you're located.
Okay, you want to repeat that, Lynn?
Okay, well, my site is beyondthetears.com. And for anyone who wants to email me, it is simply info@beyondthetears.com.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Info, I-N-F-O, info@beyondthetears.com.
Okay. Okay, and being you are what, four, how older did you say you were?
I'm sorry, how old am I now?
Uh-huh.
How old am I now? I just turned 54. I am a boomer woman.
Okay. Okay. Well, me being, and you know, I think age is great. I think women mature better when they get older. But at 38 years old, I agree that even in my generation, the way that we were brought up, it was so hush-hush. And what I'm thrilled about is that when I go out and speak, that kids know. They've heard it. Growing up, you did not talk about incest. You did not talk about child sex. You didn't talk about sex.
Right.
You didn't even mention the word sex or else you got hit.
No, and right. Every family right. was perfect. Everything was behind closed doors. And as I said, I'm a survivor of incest, and it was just not spoke about. So what I am glad as the outreach manager is prevention through education, and awareness. So I applaud that you wrote the book. I applaud that you came out and have told your story, and I'm glad I've sat through this phone call.
Oh, good. Well,
so,
your name is Lisa?
Yeah.
Lisa, if you're interested in having a link to the audio, or if anyone else is interested on the site in having a link to the audio or the transcription of tonight's teleseminar to use for educational purposes with whatever it is that you're doing, feel free to email me, and you can email me at dots@nabbw.com, and that's the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, who is sponsoring the call this evening.
Okay.
So if anyone is listening and is interested in corresponding with me, you can get in touch.
Does that go directly to you?
Yes, it does. Dot.
Okay.
D-O-T-S.
And say your name again.
My name is Dot C. Bragel, and I'm the founder of NABBW, the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, and BoomerWomenSpeak.com.
Okay.
And also, if anyone's on the call and has really enjoyed the call or felt like they've learned something from it and want to email me, I'd love to hear from you. I also invite you to join us in the forum community at BoomerWomenSpeak.com. boomenspeak.com, and that's boomerwomenspeak.com. You can also join the association, where we have several of these types of teleseminars per month for members only. Tonight we opened it up to the public because we thought that it was really a great way for us to do some outreach and offer an educational opportunity and hopefully help heal some people.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't get the answer. Where are you guys located?
I'm in Baltimore. I'm in Towson, Maryland. That's where the National Association of Baby Boomer Women is. But Lynn is in Colorado.
Oh, you're in Colorado. But I've lived in 8 different states, so I'm from a lot of places. But right now I'm in Colorado.
Right, okay. Right. And that's one of the great things about these teleseminars is people from around the country, actually the world really, but pretty much the country can be on the call at their convenience. And then members of the association can listen to any of our teleseminars. They're all on our members-only page, and it's every teleseminar we've done for the past 2.5 years are listed there, and they have to do with all things Boomer Women. And you can listen to any of them for the $50 fee at your convenience, or you can read them, too, because they've also been transcribed. Okay, we are out of time.
Hello?
Hello? Can I jump in here a bit?
Sure. We're really out of time, but we'll take one more question. Go ahead.
Okay. Sure. I think what you guys, what I've heard people speak about, this is Edward Blackoff, director of a film, Incest, the Family Tragedy.
Yes.
I think what you guys are doing is really terrific, and I'd like to put an emphasis on one thing, and that is becoming, as you are, not just self-motivated, but empowering yourself by accepting that there is some things that you can do, and in that doing, you will become stronger, and that is the best way, in my view, to deal with the injustice and the violation done to you. In that process, you become a beacon for everyone who is going to go through that, who has gone through that, and you afford a way of providing a forum.
Absolutely, and I'm sure that Lynn never thought or had any idea that this is how her life would evolve and that she would be the person helping other people. And can you tell?
I was so silenced that the book was published, and it took me like 2 years to tell anybody I wrote this book.
Right, that's a perfect example.
Thank you, Edward.
You're correct.
It provides is the conscious awareness that things can be done. So, for example, I am offering to those who want to get involved, who see film as a way of organizing and advising and illuminating, I am offering to all of you who are listening and anyone else who you might speak to, I have very practical, very sensible ways of changing this. My problem is not enough money, not enough help. Mm-hmm. That's all of our problems.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. If you want to give us your web address, why don't you do that? And then anybody on the call.
shazzamfilms.com.
Okay, tell me
Anyone
again.
Anyone who wants to get in touch with me, I got a job that is going to help you help yourself and save kids.
Okay, can you give us the web address again, please?
Shazam, S-H-A-Z-Z-A-M as in M as in magnificent, films.com.
Films.com. Okay. If you want to correspond with me through my web address, I'd be happy to see if there's a way that the association can help. Okay. Is there anybody that really has a question they feel like they have to ask tonight? If so, I'm going to take one more question. And if not, then did somebody want to say something?
No, that was just me.
Okay, all right. Then if not, I think what we're going to do is close the call now. Again, we'll give Lynn's web address so you can correspond with her through her site, and that is beyondthetears.com, and there's a contact button on her site. And then you can also correspond with me through either site, nabbw.com or boomerwomenspeak.com. And Lynn, do you have anything else you want to say this evening?
Well, I want to add that this subject is very complex, and it's hard to cover basics even in an hour. But if this opened up lines for communication for anyone, I would be really glad to know about that.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks everybody for being on the call. And
thank you, Dotsie. Thank you, Lynn.
Okay, you're
thank
welcome.
You.
And have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Dotsie.
Bye-bye.
Bye.